This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Iraqis took the first step towards shaping their political future yesterday. Retired Lieutenant General Jay Garner, the person chosen by the Bush administration to run an interim government, convened a meeting at an airfield near Nasiriyah. About 80 Iraqis attended and discussed what a new Iraqi government might look like. It was not a tidy event. Thousands outside protested that they'd been excluded from the talks. Others refused the invitation. The only concrete decision taken was an agreement to meet again in 10 days' time. About half of those inside the tent were newly returned to Iraq from exile. They left their country for many reasons, some for fear of their own safety, some went abroad to study, some decided to work for change from the outside, still others left as children and grew up listening to stories about the old country. The plight of the political exile is a familiar one in the United States. Immigrants come here for the American dream, refugees for safety, exiles to await the chance to return. The distinctions are often in the mind of the individual. In a few minutes, we'll talk about the experience of exile with an Iraqi-American imam. We'll also talk with Andre Codrescu, whom many of you know as a commentator on All Things Considered. He'll tell us about his experience of decades in exile and his return to his home country of Romania. Exiles and Return is the talk this hour. If you or someone you know has been forced to leave your native land, give us a phone call. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Have you returned to your original country? If not, how complicated is the decision to do so or not? Again, 800-989-8255. First, though, we want to get an update on the results of yesterday's meeting of U.S. and Iraqi leaders. Joining us to explain who was at the meeting and what came of it is Judith Yaffe, a senior fellow at the National Defense University, a former senior analyst on Middle Eastern and Persian Gulf issues at the CIA. And welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
As I mentioned, I think there were about 80 Iraqis from various groups at that meeting, about half of them from exile, who just returned to Iraq. Tell us basically who was there.
Well, there were representatives from several different political factions, some of the exiles, some members of the INC, although not the leadership, not Ahmed Shalabi.
That's the
Iraqi National Congress, yes. He has chosen to stay away, but several representatives I could see were there, including the cleric from Nasiriyah, who stood up and said he wanted a secular government, only to be shouted down by, you know, no way, that never happened here. You had representatives from the Sunni Arab community in exile, including Hatta Mukhlis, who is a representative of a very well-known family, Sunni Arabs from Tikrit, Saddam's home village, who paid a heavy price for opposing the regime. You had, again, a wide number. It was hard to identify them all, and I haven't seen an exact list. What was interesting to me is who was not there.
And that was my next question.
I was missing a couple of the generals who are supposedly running around in Iraq looking for support. I was missing some of the Kurds. I was missing the Shia factions, especially the Shia factions that are considered to be more extremist, the Iran-based Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, and one of its major components, which is the Dawah movement, a party that began in Iraq, heavily repressed by Saddam, and which is behind a lot of the nasty events of the past week or two, including the assassination of Ayatollah Khomeini's in Najaf last week.
That has been tracked to the Dawah, the call?
Well, not exactly, but it's tracked to the family of clerics, which were part of the Dawah movement. The actual leader of that, this 22-year-old, was a son of a murdered cleric, murdered by Saddam's regime, but they come from a well-known family, the Sadr family, which has long been involved in Shia activist opposition movements, including the founding of the Dawah Party.
Mm-hmm. Now, religion clearly was a prominent theme in the discussions, and it's going to be a difficult one for the U.S.
It's religion, and it's not religion. A lot of it is sectarian, and it is people with a different vision of what a new Iraq should be. Those who believe in an Islamic state ruled by Sharia law, Islamic law under the Quran, those who want a more secular state, those who aren't really sure but are very frightened about what the future might hold. And I think the issue is fearing a serious breakdown in law and order, that if these issues cannot be resolved through discussion, then what are we going to be left with?
There were a lot of protesters outside the meeting, some complaining that they weren't invited, some others simply asking that, hey, before we figure out a government, maybe we ought to get the water and the electricity working first. Are we seeing, is this the beginnings of democracy, as messy as it is sometimes?
It may be, but there's another issue here which I think is something which is has a time-honored historical tradition in Iraq, which is opposition to central authority compounded with an inability to recognize anybody else as having leadership potential. It happened in 1920 when the Brits were trying to establish government and were looking around for what natural leadership in of Iraqis can we call on to lead the new government. And they ultimately settled, of course, on a Jordanian Hashemite. Well, he wasn't Jordanian then. He was a Hashemite prince, King Faisal. I'm glad we're not going to do the same thing, but the point is that the Iraqis still aren't certain about the kind of central authority they want, and they certainly aren't united on any candidate, least of all those that come from the exile community and want to come back and take part in, that's the better way of looking at it, mm-hmm. if not control the next government.
Mm-hmm. There were also, there may well be a dearth of leadership because anybody with the talent to emerge as a leader was regarded as a threat to the regime, no?
Well, that was true under the old regime. Certainly Saddam got rid of anybody who he thought would be a potential rival. But now we are seeing people coming out after long years in hiding. Again, the greatest source of talent is in the religious communities where people were hidden, people were very quiescent, but were there, so that as much as their ranks were decimated, there have always been leaders to come to the fore, many of whom were appointed by Saddam, many of whom were, you know, ardently opposed to the regime. But nevertheless, there are networks and a community there which is able to, you know, put forth a lot of different kinds of political representatives and ideas. And I think the mix is much more complicated than we saw just by this first meeting in Nasiriyah. We need to see what happens ahead.
As we mentioned earlier, our main subject this hour is going to be exile and return. But Bill in Miami has called with a question about this meeting in Nasiriyah. So, Bill, why don't you go ahead?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just curious if perhaps maybe this, I had a question, and I'd watched this situation that had gone on in Iraq for some time, and one of the things that I'd noticed, they talked about how many of the Ba'athist hardliners and the Fedayeen and the Republican Guard people, the real hardliners, seem to have melted away and so on. And now, if you watch what goes on, here the United States seems to be trying to get something together with the country, and there are all these people starting fires places, protesting, saying Yankee go home, and creating havoc there, and saying that, you know, that it's not going to work. And it seems as like they've just changed the battlefield. They're still there, but they're going to change in a way. Is there any chance that these are just the hardliners and the Ba'athist people that had melted away, and now they're going to take it to the streets in this sense?
That's one of the conspiracy theories that are circulating. This is a wonderful area for all kinds of ideas of conspiracy and who's trying to do what to us. And one of them is that the hardliners, the Saddamists, disappeared, have melted into the crowds, and are now coming out and doing just what you said. I don't think that's true, because a lot of those hardliners are easily recognized by the communities, and in many cases are being attacked where they have surfaced and are the object of revenge killings. So I think they have to be careful wherever they are, and they're very worried about if they surface, that could happen. Now, the problem is, in the clerical community, there were clerics that were appointed by the Saddam regime to run the mosques and the religious foundations and schools, and anyone who collaborated has become a target of the killings, and that's what happened in Nasiriyah last week. Excuse me, in Najaf, mm-hmm. where the first person killed was a cleric who had been appointed by Saddam to be in charge of the mosque, a Saddamist. The second one, of course, was Abdelmajid Khoi, who represents an apolitical and trend and had been in exile a long time, and was killed probably for trying to defend the other guy, and he wanted to bring some kind of resolution. I guess the lesson there is it's not time for reconciliation yet. At least that kind of reconciliation.
Judith Yaffe, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Judith Yaffe is senior fellow at the National Defense University, formerly a senior analyst at the Central Intelligence Agency. She was on the line with us from her office in Washington.